One of them's Don McPherson.
Yep. He's like my one verified follower.
That doesn't matter anymore. That's old world.
Or whatever, the blue check mark or whatever that is. I don't know.
Yeah, that doesn't. That's irrelevant. That's a different lifetime when Twitter check marks.
Well, now you have to pay for it, I think.
Yeah, now anyone can just pay for it. And they're mostly just bots. Blue check marks now, they've gone from meaning that you were like who you said you were to meaning that you're not a person.
Oh.
Or if you are a person, you're an idiot.
I'm getting like all kinds of like followers that are all very clearly bots.
Yeah.
Like, pretty much it now. In droves. It's like, oh, you joined Twitter this year. Like, congratulations. Like some guy with a weird, like 8 numbers after your name. It's like so obvious.
That's pretty much the landscape of X these days.
Right. So like here I was thinking, oh man, I picked up a bunch of followers. This must be because of the podcast. And lo and behold, it's just a bunch of bots.
Yeah. Oh, a new follower. It's just a bot that wants me to purchase some pornography.
Sadly, I had to delete all those guys. But one day.
Welcome to Three Idiots and a Lawyer. Joe Schell here with Kevin O'Keefe. And Kevin, it was a busy week for Syracuse basketball. Last Saturday, a heartbreaking defeat at the hands of Clemson and our old friend Joe Girard, who we know you're a big fan of, as we heard last week.
Yeah, Joe won, me zero.
That's the way it goes. He played well. Yeah, you know, I had a feeling he was going to show up. It's like, you know, you alluded to it last week where the inverse of the excuses of, oh, he had a hard time playing in the empty arenas in the COVID year. It's because he's a guy who feeds off the crowd, and there was a lot of energy coming from that crowd in his direction. It was mostly negative energy, but there was a lot of energy for him to feed off of. He had crazy efficient day, 18 points on 5 of 6 shooting, 4 of 5 from 3. And he even scored his 2,000th career point in his old stomping ground. So, honestly, congratulations to him. I mean, that's really cool. Maybe to some people it means a little less that it took him 5 seasons as a starter to do it. But it's still an accomplishment. He's been a decorated player. And as frustrating as he's been, he's been a good college basketball player.
Yeah, well, joke's on him. He still has to go to Clemson.
Well, joke's on him. He probably gets to play in the NCAA tournament this year.
Hey, you never know. But, I think I sent that gif on Tuesday. The Don Corleone gif. Every time I let it go, they pull me back in.
Right. But you know what, Kevin?
I just
want
to give up on, you know, a postseason appearance. But, you know,
We'll get to that. But the bad news first, you know, despite scoring, 24 points in the first half, going 9 minutes without scoring at all in that first half, and really no standout offensive performances, you know, only 16 points from Chris Bell and J.J. Starling each. Chris Bell had a decent shooting day, 4 of 10 from 3, which is fine, but really nothing to really speak of. And despite all that, they were in it at the end. They came roaring back in the second half. They were playing with fire, and the offense looked a little better, and the defense was locking in a little bit at times, you know, predominantly zone again, as we discussed. But they were right in it, and they came back. They tied up the game at what? There was 7 minutes left, and the game was tied, and only to let it all slip away again in the end. So What do you take from that, Kevin? What does this game mean?
I mean, when I saw the result, and you know, I was kind of like waiting to one foot in, one foot out to be like, oh, is this worth watching? Is it worth watching? And then we kept kind of hanging around, and then once they put the nail in the coffin with probably like 4 minutes left, you know, I was like ready to throw in the towel. You know, rebuild for next year, because there's no way we're beating UNC. And that would be it's our last quad one opportunity. Unless, do we play UNC one more time?
No, we already played them twice.
I thought we had maybe we have one more quad win.
Did you block out the first UNC game from memory?
That was absolutely, yeah, that was a disaster. But I mean, as far as the Clemson game goes, like, yeah, it sucks to lose to a former player who, you know, kind of did us dirty, in my opinion, and was just sort of an eyesore and just a momentum buster a lot of times when he would shoot 10% from three. But we don't have to go down that road.
Well, we can, because it's interesting, because he did the exact opposite.
Yeah, he played really well.
He played efficiently. His shot selection was good.
He's clearly grown up, and, like, you know, isn't he a super senior at this point?
Yeah, this is season number 5 for him as a full-time starter.
Like, you notice a difference, and I mean, you know, props
to
him.
If he played like this for us, many fewer Syracuse fans would dislike him.
Well, if he played like this for us every game in and game out, right? Like, Joe Girard had a few, like, gems in his time. Like, that's kind of what padded his stat sheet, but yeah, that was a different player that was out there on Saturday. It was, you know, very collected, very, like, intentional, and
good shot, you know, selection.
Yeah, they just
still had a pull up jumper from the logo, though. It wouldn't be a Joe Girard game without at least one.
Of course. What stuck out to me is that there have only been, I think four times this has happened since like the 90s, where we have allowed an opponent to shoot 60% on us, which is, it doesn't sound like that much when you think about it, like 60% from the field is pretty darn good.
That's a crazy.
There've only been four
offense
times in the last like 20 years that we've allowed that. Three of them have been in the last four games, and right, one of the last of which was against Clemson. So I think the takeaway there is, let's not let opponents shoot 60% or more from the field. You know, they just sort of cleaned up all over the place. They shot 43% from three. They out-rebounded us. They almost doubled up on our total rebounds and just kind of, you know, just made us look dumb there down the stretch. There's not a whole lot else to say other than we just got sloppy in the last 4 or 5 minutes. But otherwise, just like you said, we could have won that one.
If they
and
played
I think
better,
I think we'd be having a very different conversation right now if we had managed to pull that one out.
Yeah, what's frustrating to me is if they had just played slightly better than horrible in the first half offensively, they probably win this game. But they dug such a hole in the beginning that it was in the end too much to overcome. But they were, like I said, they were right in it up until the last 5 or 6 minutes. If you don't play so terribly, 24 points in the first half. If you do better than that, there's a very good chance they win this game. And like you said, if you win the Clemson game, then, you know, hindsight's 20/20 now, but it's a very different discussion. It's a much more realistic discussion about tournament aspirations if you win both of these games. It's going to be another year of shoulda, woulda, couldas, you know, losing to Boston College, getting dismantled by Wake Forest, losing to Clemson, and then, you know, you come back and you follow that up by doing the unexpected and pulling out the North Carolina game at home with an 86-79 victory over the Tar Heels. None of us saw that coming. I mean, we were all but just dismissing it as even being a possibility, especially after how we played in Chapel Hill only a month ago, where it was the least competitive basketball game most of us will have ever had the displeasure of watching. To turn around and after Benny Williams is dismissed from the team, after Naheem McLeod is injured and lost for the year, after all these backbreaking losses, to turn around and pull this game out, I certainly didn't see it coming. I said as much last week. I had written it off entirely, but they're able to do it. A lot of it, I can't believe I'm saying this at this point in the year or this year at all. Going to the 2-3 zone is saving this team right now. And I can't believe that we are sitting here talking about the 2-3 zone saving the post-Jim Boeheim Syracuse basketball team. If only for a day, it has saved them for this extra day.
Yeah. I mean, just like Mayweather and Pacquiao, Moinir Hima and Armando Bacot. It was just a matchup that I always wanted to see that sorely disappointed me because Bacot's probably a future, you know, NBA star. And
is he?
Moinir Hima, I don't even know if he knows how to tie and
shoot. This is his eighth year of college. I think if he was going to be an NBA star, he would have left by now. I made a joke while we were watching the game that is he going to go to the NBA this year, or is he trying to become the first college player to be teammates with his son?
Well, I mean, every team needs a Van Wilder, you know, and I think that was a big difference. Right, obviously, Moinir Hima is not really ready for court action, but you can't keep Malik Brown out there for 40 minutes. You need a guy to kind of eat up a few minutes. And to your point from before, we're really going in reverse back to the Boeheim era because, yeah, the 2-3, and also we're only playing six guys because right. We only have six guys to play. You know, no more McLeod, no more Benny Williams. You know, I don't know. I guess, they had to throw Justin Taylor out there for 23 minutes, which was a real eyesore. I guess he's our sixth man now. Because
Justin Taylor is a starter, so technically Copeland is the sixth guy.
Technically, yes, Copeland.
You're right. When it's crunch time, Copeland's on the floor.
Justin Taylor's my sixth man. It pains me to watch him out there as a starter, but
we're playing him out of position like half the team, and we're letting him play through whatever it is his shooting struggles are. Which I don't know. There's not much to say about that. He's been bad this year. He's supposed to be a threat from three, and he just hasn't been.
I don't know. This when it's Malik Brown out there, then we have a legitimate opportunity to drain a three with five different guys on the court. Not very many teams can say that. But not many teams also have to deal with the size differential in the paint that we do. I thought Bacot was just going to clean up in this one. And I think we held him to, what, like 14 points or something?
He didn't dominate by any means. You know,
10 or 12 rebounds? Like, it wasn't that bad.
I get the impression. I mean, North Carolina fans must be frustrated with him because he seems pretty complacent at times when he could potentially be taking over a game. He
just kind of disappeared. And I don't know if that was to our credit or to their detriment. Right.
But some of it's Malik.
It's not like
sure.
They were getting him they were feeding him and we were just stuffing him down there. Like the ball wasn't reaching the paint. They weren't getting it into the low post.
I think a lot of that's
the
zone.
Way too many bad shots and a lot of their good shots just weren't going in too. So I think, there was a little bit of fortune on our side, like them just being cold from the field.
Some of it's luck, but yeah, their game plan was going to be to get it into the low post and get some easy looks. And this Syracuse roster playing man-to-man defense would have been unable to stop that. So by playing the zone, you can make it a little tougher on them to get the ball to the low post where they want. And you kind of force them to take some more shots from the perimeter. And sure, there's some luck involved where they missed some good looks. But overall, the strategy was sound. The zone was the appropriate call there. You know you don't have anyone. Even Malik Brown, for all that he's done for this team this year, he wasn't going to be able to stop Bacot one-on-one all game long. Did a great job slowing him down, but it was the choice to play the 2-3 on defense all game long that really saved that team from getting dominated in the low post. Because Carolina has more than just Bacot, too. They have a few guys who could have just imposed their will and scored at will, more or less. But it worked out. It was a well-coached game from Red, I felt like. It felt like, you know, I've been vocal with games where I felt like he was out-coached and he was overmatched. This is one where we have to give him credit. He came out with a game plan. They executed it. He chose a defensive strategy that worked. He knew how to change tempo on offense. He chose the right spots to run. he chose the right spots to pull it back and play slower. Because with a six-man bench right or a six-man rotation right now, and giving up a ton of size at you know two or three positions, you can't run up and down the court all game long. So I just thought it was a masterfully coached game, and you had offensive performances that you need from your studs, from your guards. It was a very guard-heavy attack with JJ and Judah, and that's what we kind of thought coming into the year that we would need to have success this year.
Yeah, and the guards were just balling out. I mean, they took all kinds of ill-advised bad drives and shots. Everything was just going in. It was just, you know, we shot 62% from the field. And I think we, like, cleaned up from three. Yeah, we shot 47% from three.
And you kind of alluded to it. Two for two from Malik, that's big. I mean, if he can do that.
If he can go out there and drain a three consistently, that is going to be an absolute game changer, because you can't, it's like whack-a-mole. You can't choose a guy to key in on. And so if you can, you can have, you know, Starling and Bell from the corners, Brown from the top of the key, and then Judah doing what he does. And, you know, maybe even Justin Taylor can make a three every once in a while. That's going to be a really impressive equation going forward.
Malik is showing us that the defense has to at least respect the fact that he may let one go.
Yeah.
And that, you know, to me, spacing has been our issue on offense all year long. Not that we have the best offensive strategy or really any semblance of running a system on offense, but without proper floor spacing, our simple guard heavy pick and roll game isn't going to work. So the more guys that can shoot from the perimeter, the more it helps the spacing.
Man, but sometimes, man, Judah just gets it done. He just wills it. You know, it's just sheer athleticism and just talent winning out, where it's just, I feel like any other guard we've had in the last 10 years just gets stuffed over and over again on these like crazy play. And somehow he manages to weave through it and make the right decision. And a lot of times, you know, sometimes it's a jump shot, sometimes it's a layup. But I mean, I don't know. I think if we're gonna make some crazy miracle tournament run, we're gonna be the Judah Mintz show, you know, at least for 30 minutes a game, because man, that's fun to watch. And I mean, it's how we created our runs, you know, particularly that run. I think it was to start off the second half where we had it was 11-0 run or something. We drained some threes and Judah did some things, spread the ball around. And then we kind of, you know, kept the foot on the gas, which is the exact opposite of what I thought was going to happen. What I thought was going to happen is what happened in the first half, where we jumped out to a lead and then slowly let that lead, you know, expire. And then essentially come out, I think it was tied after the first half, despite the fact that we were ahead by 8 points or so for most of the first 20 minutes. So, I don't know, maybe we're turning the corner. Maybe that's a kind of a milestone, like season changing win over a top 10 team. The first one I think we've had since Duke in 2019, which I'm pretty sure we didn't make the tournament that year, but it was fun when we beat Duke. But yeah, let's see where we go with this. But it's certainly, it was a must win and we got it. So we're technically still alive in my book. Just keep that figure in mind. The 50% in conference, we're 7-7 now, I think. You know, we've won, 17 games, 17-9. I mean, that resume is starting to smell like a bubble resume, especially because I think the stat was post-UNC game. It is AP top 10 teams are now 32-34 versus unranked teams on the road this season. So you're seeing a lot of North Carolina is losing to a lot of Syracuse's. And that's definitely, I think Kansas lost last week. you know, you're seeing some top 10 teams come down. That's what we need to happen, right? We need more. I don't know. The numbers are kind of crazy, where UNC's ranked number 7 and they only have, you know, they're like, I can't remember what their record is, but they have like 5 or 6 losses. The top is not what it normally is. So it seems like there's a wide
after open field. After UConn and Purdue.
Right, right. But in the conference, though, is what I mean.
Oh.
Like the top top
right.
Tier of the ACC. Like there isn't any like top dog. If we're able to beat a UNC, like my point being, the conference, you know, the conference tournament, it could be very entertaining if we're able to keep this up. If we're able to take down the best team in the conference like that, then the sky's the limit, and obviously, you know, the floor is the basement.
Yeah, you know,
go anyway.
It doesn't change a whole lot, but at the same time, it changes everything because this team could go either way. We could still see them drop one right away in the conference tournament.
Yeah.
They have yet to show the ability to consistently put performances like this together. They have yet to show us much that's a possibility, but they're also fighting against a lot. So what the future holds is really an uncertainty right now, but the fact that they've finally shown the ability to win a game of this caliber is a first. So yeah, that certainly opens up some possibilities. I'm still skeptical that they could make any sort of run in the conference tournament because that would involve putting a few strong performances potentially against better teams together. And this is kind of just one example all year long. So we'll see. But yeah, we're alive. You know, when you play in a conference where there's an automatic bid in the postseason tournament, then you're never out until you're eliminated from the conference tournament.
Yeah. We're going to have to do some damage for sure.
Yeah. You know, these games that we've talked about ad nauseum that they've dropped over the last few weeks, you know, really muddles everything. There was an opportunity where just a couple of these games go a different way. Now with a signature win, things look a lot different, but you've kind of dug yourself. Now we've been saying this almost every year we've been a bubble team. There are these losses that you just dig yourself a little too deep, but you know, to me, you more or less have to run the table at this point. Cause like you said, there's no more massive stumbling blocks. There's no more big quad one opportunities like this UNC game was. So keep putting good performances together, run the table, and including a couple in the conference tournament, and maybe we're, you know, sweating it out on Selection Sunday with some hope. But you drop a couple of these games, and I don't know how much hope there's left at this point. But it's a good game. Is fun. I think we deserve this after the season we've been having. It's been, you know, up and down and frustrating. So it was a good game. I think we'd be remiss if we went any further without talking about Kwadir Copeland as well. I mean, you were praising him last week for the types of performances he's been putting in, and those three steals down the stretch really kept us ahead and helped seal that game.
Yeah, really impressive. Yeah,
he's just got a knack. Him and Malik, but especially Kwadir, they just have a knack for the ball.
Right. I don't know how much time he really got at point guard.
We really ran through Judah like the whole game, it felt like.
Yeah, but I really do think that the true position, which this team doesn't really apply to the traditional sense, but I think having Copeland kind of manage the offense, you know, at least the limited opportunities he's had, I mean, just being a great passer and a playmaker, and one who creates opportunities just all over the place and really has the vision. I don't know. You got to balance that with the ball out factor that Judah has, the X factor, the why we all watch basketball, crazy, like LeBron James, you know, talent just brimming everywhere.
Who do you want to have the ball to start a possession? The guy who's the best creator in general for an offense, or your best player?
Yeah. The Michael Carter Williams versus Brandon Trish.
Yeah.
constant struggle.
And, you know, you'd mentioned the rebounding disparity against Clemson. We didn't win the rebounding battle against North Carolina, but it was close enough. 31 to 23. I'll take that against North Carolina. Any game.
Yep. Every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
I saw it when I was looking at box scores and they brought it up on the broadcast, but it was still shocking when I saw it. 50 rebounds we gave up in Chapel Hill. 50 rebounds. So I'll take 31-23 in the rebounding.
I don't know. Maybe Baycott just kind of gave us the day off for whatever reason, but you know, he just didn't seem to be with it.
I think he was dealing with some sort of injury too. They were working on him a lot, but mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and give the credit to the game plan and Malik Brown. I really do think that was most of it. So next up is Georgia Tech, who, much like their football team, they're somewhat an anomaly this year. They're not a particularly good team. They're coming in 10-15, 3-11 in the ACC. But two of those three conference wins are against Duke and North Carolina. So I don't know what to make of this Georgia Tech team. Seeing as we're not a particularly good team, I would guess that we have a chance to beat them because they have only been beating the good teams in conference. So maybe that will play in our favor for this one. But certainly an interesting team Georgia Tech is. But since their win over North Carolina at the end of January, they are on a 5-game losing streak. So they're coming in cold. And it's this, like I said a few minutes ago, I think this is one we have to have. I think we need to more or less run the table from here.
Yeah, agreed. It's a must win, backs against the wall. I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that we can be still relevant by the time we go to see the Notre Dame game in a couple, eight days.
Yeah.
Which will be fun in the dome. My first time back to the dome and for a basketball game in a couple of years.
Yeah.
I don't think I've been for a game for a basketball game since probably, I don't know, before COVID it might have been.
I haven't been since that weekend we all went in 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. The this exact same weekend 4 years ago, I guess.
When your wife was patient zero for COVID.
Exactly. Yeah. She was hanging out in Wuhan too much.
Eating those bats again.
Yep. Told her not to do that. Yeah. What's interesting about the stretch down here is, we could very well be in a situation where, you know, if we do put together a bunch of wins, then there's Joe Girard right there between us and the end of the season and the last week, the last game of the year, down in South Carolina. So hopefully we don't regret that, I guess, because that would really stink to have Joe Girard be the one to spoil our postseason opportunity. But I don't know. I mean, I feel
if
like
there's something we know about Joe Girard. We just watched him kind of throw his team on his back and win a game. So does that mean he's due to make a boneheaded mistake to lose his team a game?
I really hope so. So we got 6 games left.
So yeah, Georgia Tech's on Saturday, and then the following Tuesday is NC State, who has a, you know, similar looking team to us, 15-9, 7-6 in conference. They're not really getting any bubble talk. So again, a game you have to have, you have to keep those peer programs. We weren't able to do it against Wake Forest, which that Wake Forest game is going to be a killer because they're on the bubble.
That was bad.
They're currently taking a bubble spot. You still have to win this game. I mean, It's not gonna move the needle in a positive direction, but losing will move the needle in a very negative direction.
One game at a time from here on out, you know, we're just go 1-0. That's the Doug Peterson saying. Just go 1-0 and move on.
Well,
see where you're at, because so much changes this time of year. Like we've had this conversation so many different, mid to late Februarys where we were all over the place in terms of like, oh, we've been eliminated. It's over. Oh,
the last time we made the tournament and went to the Sweet 16, we have an episode of this podcast during that season where the title is something along the lines of "The Tournament Hopes Are Dead."
Yeah, the prospects for the following year, you know, and let's start talking about, you know, potential recruits, and let's brush the dust off of here. But anything can happen. That's why they call it March Madness. It's fun. But the best we can do is just keep doing what we're doing, not have anyone get injured, because I think that would be unprecedented for this team. I don't even know. We'd have to reach into the doldrums to see who would get regular minutes, because I think we're already giving guys minutes that probably shouldn't get them. You know, I mean, I think we talked about this last week, but I'm now starting to kind of fully realize the impact of dismissing Benny and how that might not. I mean, I'm not in the locker room. I'm not behind the scenes, but you know, if we do have an injury down the road, then we're really going to pay the price for having dismissed what is, you know, a guy that's not more than having his best season, but it's still a guy you can put out there with some level of confidence. Whereas I don't think we have too many others that are sitting on the bench ready to go, you know, with a full year of starting under their belt.
He wasn't lighting it up by any means, but Benny was overall starting to play well. And I don't know what's going on with Kyle Cuff. He's, you know, we have a 6-man rotation right now, and he's a healthy scratch from it every game for some reason. And we're not getting any answers on that. And we may not.
No. Yeah. Not quite enough of a sample size this year to
very odd about him. You know, he seemed like a good energy guy off the bench for a few minutes at a time, but when we're at our greatest need, he's dropped out of the rotation entirely. I'm sure there's a reason for it. We just don't know what it is. So Kevin, stars and demerits. Go ahead, give a star, give a demerit.
All right. I'll give my star to, I mean, I'll do the easy one. I'll give my star to Judah Mintz. You know, well played. Well played there. You know, he looked good against Clemson too. Probably a few too many turnovers, but that was just kind of, there was a lot going on, a lot of sloppy play. But yeah, I'll go ahead and give Judah the star and come back to me on the demerit.
Okay. All right. If you're taking Judah, then I'm going to go ahead and take Quadir Copeland and his defense and his ability to knock the ball away and get us a few extra possessions down the stretch there. That was huge. And I'm not sure we win that game without those huge plays from Quadir. And, you know, there isn't really a glaring demerit overall. So I'm going to go ahead and just give a team-wide demerit to free throw shooting, which has been relatively poor lately in most of the year. And not being able to consistently knock down free throws made us sweat out the end of that game a little more than we should have had to. You want to pass on a demerit? You know, no performance bad enough to warrant a demerit to you?
I don't think so. You know, I mean, I guess I could give my star and my demerit to Judah. I'm trying to.
We'll take your demerit and we'll give it to the student section for booing Joe Girard, firing him up to make him have a great game.
No, I support that. That is absolutely the right call. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I don't know how much he turned it. It felt like everybody turned the ball over a lot against Clemson. So, you know, I'll just give a demerit to our guards for sloppy play, especially down the stretch against Clemson. Like those, you know, I think the commentators against UNC were saying a good point about how it's the first 3 minutes of the half and the last 3 minutes of the half that really create runs and establish momentum and help you finish off wins and prevent other teams from doing so to you. So, I mean, we saw both, right, where we were able to finish it off with a lead. We kind of, you know, I wouldn't say it was definitive against UNC, but against Clemson, we just kind of collapsed in the last 4 minutes. It was sure. Just,
yeah,
you know, one of the, I think we may have gotten tired or some other sort of miscue. We just looked really sloppy. We tried to push it too much and nothing was going in. You know, it's just one of those days. So yeah, demerit goes to the guards.
So between Georgia Tech and NC State, you don't have to pick scores, but what do you foresee? You think they're gonna go on a run, win both these games? What's gonna happen?
No, I don't think we're gonna win both these games. My heart says that we need to, mm-hmm. but you know, my guess is we probably split. You know, these next two games, I would. You know, if I was putting money on it, I'd say the next game is
Georgia Tech.
That's Tech. Okay, I'd say we lose to Tech.
Okay,
and then we managed to scrape by with a win this weekend against was it Florida State? Yeah,
NC State.
NC State. Yeah, yeah. And yeah. Florida State's next week.
I'm kind of on the same page, but I have it flipped. I think we beat Georgia Tech. They're reeling right now, 5-game losing streak. They've gotten up for a couple big games, but outside of that, haven't really played well in conference. So I think we take care of business against Georgia Tech. But NC State is, you know, a lot like the Wake Forest game. It's a team that looks similar to us on paper. I'm just not sure we're going to be able to sustain that level of success. This team's been very inconsistent, and I think we'll find ourselves sitting here again next week saying, again, oh, well, that loss did it. We're definitely out of the tournament now.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, we never really focus, because we don't have time, right, to focus on the entire tournament or the entire field of, you know, the 64 eligible schools that compete.
Yeah, a lot of it depends on what the other bubble teams are doing.
Right. We always focus in on this podcast on primarily, you know, Syracuse and the ACC and our schedule and whatnot, which is a sliver of all these random schools that end up playing postseason. So honestly, it's so much comes down to that championship weekend and the conference tournaments. So until then, we got to just keep stringing them together and just build as good a resume as we possibly can.
We have a weird knack for writing ourselves off prematurely while simultaneously holding on to hope a little too long.
Right. Yeah.
It's exactly. An oxymoron.
It's a double-edged sword. But it's always like Mount St. Mary's or UMBC that just kind of comes out of the woodwork. And, you know, those are the games where we have to root for, you know, the team that's in the Sun Belt Conference. We got to root for the team that's already in the tournament, because if somebody else sneaks in, that's one less
bubble spot. Right. That's constant
conversation we have every year.
You don't want a conference that has, you know, you have a mid-major conference that has a top team that's already secured their at-large bid. You want them taking the auto bid.
Mm-hmm.
Because if a different team sneaks in, you're right. That's one fewer.
So I'll be rooting for status quo here on out.
Yeah, just hope all the top mid majors just win their auto bids, and that's that. So while we're on the topic of Syracuse basketball, I think we need to give a shout out to the premier Syracuse basketball team this year, the women, ranked number 19. Just tonight, pulled out a road victory against Miami. Miami closed the gap to within 5 late in the fourth quarter, but Syracuse is able to go on a run, pull it out, and win 71-60. So we'll pay attention to them, see where they end up. They're shooting for a relatively high seed, and they're playing really well right now. So that, you know, they'll certainly be the team to follow. So no matter what happens with the men's team, we will have a rooting interest in March. It will just be the women's team, but they're good. They're a lot of fun to watch, and we'll have to keep tabs on them.
Congratulations to Dwight Freeney for being inducted into the Hall of Fame, the 9th player, I think, that we have that's been inducted into Canton. So I think he's number 2 on the overall sack list, top. He's the season leader in single season sacks and single game sacks for the program, longtime Indianapolis Colt. And I've always been a big Dwight Freeney fan. Just the skill has been always fun to watch. It was always fun to watch as a kid. He was one of my favorite players. Whenever I'd play pickup football, I'd always try to like mimic the Dwight Freeney spin. So congratulations to him.
And Dwight will be our guest next week. We'll talk to Dwight.
You're welcome anytime, Dwight. You can explain to me how to do the spin properly.
The more players in the NFL Hall of Fame that have worn Syracuse orange, the more it helps recruiting, the more it gives you some legitimacy as a program. So hopefully he's not the last, but
I could have a side conversation with him. I would just love if he came on this podcast and the first words out of his mouth were, "Man, I listened to that first episode you guys ever did. And man, you couldn't be more wrong, Joe, about McPherson and how McNabb is actually," because McNabb was Freeney's quarterback, the best quarterback in program history. But if you ever want to go down memory lane, just go back to episode 1, 4 years ago, where we had a robust debate about who was the best quarterback in Syracuse football history.
Where back then, unlike now, not only did we actually have three idiots, but we also actually had a lawyer. So things have certainly changed since then.
A little bit. Well, we'll get a spare idiot back here in the next few weeks. We'll see. Stay tuned. We'll leave you in suspense.
Okay. So I just have to point out Syracuse lacrosse, still working on getting Colin. We'll let you know. Hopefully we can have a lacrosse discussion with Colin at some point. But the men's team, they're still rolling. They're off to a hot 3-0 start. They just played a very overmatched Manhattan team. Yankee Hall of Famer Mariano Rivera was in the crowd to take on this horrible, horrible game. Apparently his son was one of the face-off specialists for Manhattan College. So of the roughly 3,000 people that were in the dome to watch this game, Mariano Rivera was one of them.
That's pretty cool.
You got to watch his son's team lose 16-3. You got to watch a fantastic performance from Joey Spallina, who is on an absolute tear, put up 10 points on 3 goals and 7 assists. So we'll keep an eye on him and the team. Things get real fast with this upcoming game on Saturday. We will welcome number 4 Maryland to the dome to take on number 5 Syracuse. So a matchup of top 5 teams, and we'll finally get to see this team and what they're all about against some tougher competition. So that will be on Saturday. And there was another big game that happened this weekend around the commercials and the chicken wings. So Kevin, what did you think of the Super Bowl?
Whoa! I thought we were calling it the big game.
Yeah, they can. I'll bleep it out. I'll bleep it out in post.
I mean, it's not like there's any copyright.
No, there is. There is. You can't say Super Bowl in like commercials and stuff.
Oh wow, that would also require Roger Goodell to tune into our podcast, which, if we're going to have anyone on this podcast, he's the last person that I would want anywhere near it. So please stay away. it was a fun little game. I'm not as pissed about it as most people are. I don't know. It was a perfectly entertaining second half. You know, the first half was a defensive struggle. You've got two of the what have become premier defenses in the NFL. I think San Francisco is probably the best defense in the NFC all year. And then as the year got on, Kansas City's defense sneakily got better and better. By the time the playoffs started, they kind of peaked. And that's exactly what you want. I think I was talking about the Ravens before. Who kind of did the opposite, right? They started out, they had a great season, and then they kind of laid an egg against the Chiefs in the championship game, where most of the AFC were kind of on the bubble, so to speak, going into, January. And the Ravens were really the only team that came out as a clear playoff team. San Francisco, I mean, there was they were clearly going to be like one of the top two seeds, but somehow due to Philadelphia and others just sort of imploding down the stretch, became kind of the standard bearer. And then Brock Purdy finds himself one drive away from, you know, being able to hoist that trophy. But I don't know. I mean, maybe we could have a small little discussion about, like, I know some people are being critical of the Niners choosing to take the ball first.
They're saying they didn't know the rules.
Obviously, the overtime rules are different now, so I don't even know why there is a clock.
But how do you not know the overtime rules? That's if that's true, that's
did he say that he didn't know the overtime rule? Or
some of the Chiefs players were saying, or sorry, some of the 49ers players were saying that they didn't know the overtime rules were different in the postseason, in that they didn't realize what the advantage would be to deferring possession, that they thought they could take the ball, go down, score a touchdown, and the game would be over. It's a moot point because they only kicked the field goal anyway, which even during the regular season rules, that still gives the other team a possession.
Yeah, frankly, I was right there. I didn't realize that there was a difference. I thought that they just played multiple periods with the same rules intact, but I thought that the rules still stood that you give up a touchdown.
I hadn't heard that up until the point that Jim Nance told me.
Well, yeah, but then Tony Romo was like losing his shit.
Yeah. Tony Romo had a weird game. He was, I don't know.
I would just say this. It would surprise me if Shanahan did not know the exact rules and did not have his guys out there ready to make the call. Yeah. But like, I think I saw some GIF of Patrick Mahomes' face when he saw that they decided to take the ball first. And it was like, are you kidding? I don't know. It was, not really too much to say. It was a fun game. The Chiefs seemed to want it more. You could tell, like everyone, you know, Travis Kelce and all that stuff with, you know, his love interest or whatever. But he played a good game, and he clearly wanted it down the stretch.
I don't know that.
I thought he was going to score a touchdown there in the last, you know, just to end it, where they were going on that drive. It felt to me like, you know, he was going to muscle that in there. And then he had to get stopped by about six Niners.
I'm not sure I would say that Kansas City wanted it more, but to me what it boils down to is you gave the best quarterback in football the opportunity to go throw a game-winning touchdown in overtime. And that's what he did. And that's kind of what we figured he would do. Yeah, I don't love dynasties. I enjoy watching more parody than that, but it's impressive what they're doing and what they've been able to do and what it seems they're poised to continue doing. So hats off to Kansas City. San Francisco, I still believe, had the better roster, but in such a quarterback-heavy league, that can make all the difference. And to me, that's what did make the difference. Purdy played fine. I have no qualms with the way Brock Purdy played. I think he played better as the game went on, but Patrick Mahomes makes plays, and that's what he did. He went and he made plays when they mattered most.
I think I have less of a problem with these dynasties because they always come out of the AFC, and I'm an NFC person, and there's always been a ton of parity in the NFC. You know, you got all these championships from the, like, New York Giants coming out of left field, and so it just means that whoever is the NFC champion typically has a more predictability when it comes to who they're going to play in the Super Bowl, which as a Philadelphia fan, like, you know, we've been blessed to be in that game, you know, three times in the last 20 years. And, you know, have only gotten the one Super Bowl. So it's not like they're perennial contenders, but it's just so dang hard to get there. I mean, and so that's why it just kind of blows my mind that the Chiefs are themselves setting the narrative that the expectation is for them to three-peat. Because if they don't meet that bar, then they'll have let themselves and the entire, like, you know, the whole bar that they've set for themselves down. They won't have met it if they don't win a Super Bowl, which is like so much has to go right for you to win the Super Bowl. It's just unbelievable that you would start talking three-peat like immediately after the game. I just feel like that sets yourself up for failure going into next year.
The questions were asked. They were responding to questions. But, yeah, they were a little more vocal answering the questions than you would have expected.
And Travis Kelce was asked a single question before he started yelling about three-peats because he was super jazzed up after – I don't know. I didn't watch much of the post game, but I did catch a little snippet of him just like screaming at the camera.
Viva Las Vegas.
Or whatever it was. I don't know.
I just like good plays.
Yeah. Adam Brooks, shout out to you if you're out there still.
Nah. All right. Well, I believe that is all that we have for this week. Please follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, 3ILPod. Send us an email, ask us a question at 3idiotslawyer@gmail.com. That's the digit 3idiotslawyer@gmail.com.
Noah, we know you're out there. You know, send us a mailbag.
Yeah. Ask us a question about St. Mary's basketball, I guess, and we just won't answer it again. I don't know. If you have the 1990 NCAA lacrosse championship trophy, please let us know. We just want to know that it's safe. Matt is still asking. He wants to know before he moves away that it's safe and accounted for. And yeah, that's all we have. So for Kevin O'Keefe, I'm Joe Schell. We hope to be back next week.